back on the call, and we have our counsel, Ms. Pakkanen and Ms. Folks, and Jean Galvin. So, just want to thank Ms. Folks for all of her work, and Ms. Pakkanen for, you know, getting more and more applications through. I know our candidates are anxious to move forward in the process, so thank you for all of your work. It's not easy putting together all of these applications. And thank you, Ms. Galvin, for being here, as well as questions may arise. So we will I think, go through the agenda. If somebody on the call has another obligation and really wants the application reviewed, speak up right now. Others, because we have so many, I think it will be easier for us to just follow the schedule. And I promise you, we go through them pretty quickly. So, and if you have questions, we will call on you. So I see some of you where I know I have no questions on your application. Some I do, so I appreciate you all being here. So we will go ahead and call this meeting to order. The time is 9:04, and Ms. Folks, could you do the roll call, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Malott?
Here.
Dr. Caterino?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Our next item is the approval of minutes from September 24, 2021. Do I hear an approval? Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make that motion to approve the minutes.
Okay, I'll second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion approved. We can move to item number 4, which is discussion, consideration, and possible action on psychology applicants. I'm going to go ahead and read something since we have so many of you on the call. And as of November 1, 2020, the EPPP consists of two parts, knowledge part 1 and part 2 skills. Passing scores on both parts of EPPP are required to qualify for an independent and unrestricted license in Arizona. Individuals whose applications for the supervised temporary license and EPPP, you know, EPPP only or exam and licensure that were received prior to number 1 are approved to pass only part 1 to qualify for licensure. The approval is specific to the application reviewed and does not extend to potential future applications. So that's an important part to note. And then if you've made an application on or after November 1, in the following categories, must pass both parts of the EPPP to qualify for licensure. So EPPP only, EPPP and licensure, supervised temporary licensure, with and without the EPPP. And this also applies to applicants who have passed part 1 but are not independently licensed in other states. Individuals submitting reapplications on or after November 1, 2020 are also required to pass both part 1 and part 2. So I'm just adding that because I know there's been confusion, and so I just want to be sure that our future license holders are aware of that requirement.
And I have two questions that I'm unsure of. So one is a quarter hours. How do we count
when a quarter hours is 3 semester credit equals 5 quarter hours.
Okay. And when you have a, you know, practicum or internship forms that are only, the numbers are only reported by the applicant, but there's no signature by the supervisor, do we require because person could read?
Well, I think hours. What has happened in those cases, they're actually just using their postdoc, and so then I don't worry about it. So when we come to an individual case, if they're using those hours, and that is the only hours they have. But I've noticed students like to put in all their hours. Applicants like to put in all their hours. They're not students anymore. my apologies. But if they have a valid postdoc, and of course they have to have internship hours, then as long as they meet it, if they're using those pre-internship hours and there's no signature, then we will send it back for, you know, a request for the information. So.
Okay, so it has to be validated by the supervisor, not just reported by the applicant.
Yes, it has to be validated by the supervisor. So
thank you.
Yeah, and I think in the case that you're thinking, they also had postdocs, which is, you know, so really it depends on each individual case.
Okay.
Whether it becomes an issue or not. So
thank you.
Okay. Okay, so let's move to 4A, which is requesting approval to sit for the EPPP. I'll go ahead and do the first one, and that is Ashley Canton-Jones, Psi-B, received her degree from Alliant International University, did her internship actually at the same place where I did my internship at the Biloxi VA in Biloxi, Mississippi. And her application looks good. I didn't see any problems with it. And unless you had a question, Dr.
No, no problems.
Okay. Do you want to do Sarah Emmert?
Okay. Sarah Emmert, a degree from University of Alabama. It's accredited. It's internship at Tuscaloosa, 1,500 hours. Postdoc, 2080. She does have two references, and she has the attestation form. So I thought it was okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The next one we have is Sharon Symington, who got her degree from Capella University. And one question, and I see Sarah Symington on the call, so... So one question I did have was regarding her internship and interaction with other trainees. There was a note on it. And I was wondering, since we do have Dr. Symington on the phone, if you could speak to how was that requirement met, the interaction with other trainees.
Okay. The internship site itself, we had interns, but they were from marriage family therapists, licensed clinical social workers, alcohol and drug counselors. So there was a large group of different interns. And so I met my contacts through my cohort. And so I did a lot of case consulting, discussing, you know, psychological topics with my actual cohort.
Is that organized by the university?
Yes.
And was there a supervisor present?
Some of the conversations there was. It was like a conference call through a good share of the practicum and some of the internship, and some of it was not. It was either a group call with several of us together, or it was a one-on-one if there was specific questions and support given.
Okay. So would you say for the most part it was organized by the university to meet that interaction with other interns?
Yes.
Okay. And your supervisor at your internship site was aware of it?
Yes, she was.
Okay.
And they're also, it was like the first, I don't know, maybe 5 months of the intern. We also had she was working on her doctorate in psychology and already had, from the state of Michigan, I believe, she had her clinical psychology license there due to requirements being different in that state. And so my training director did say that my contact hours with her while she was there could count towards those collaborations.
Okay. And then did you also have collaborations with the other type of interns at the agency?
I did, yes. We had regular group meetings and, you know, we had some kind of informal get-together meetings as well, discussing topics to do with mental health and substance abuse.
Okay.
But we did have weekly.
Do you have questions?
Just on page 27, there was total number of hours worked per week. It says 32 to 40 for 52 weeks. And then it says direct and indirect. So does that mean there were 32 direct hours, 40 indirect, or does it mean that it varied from week to week, the number of hours worked?
It means it varied because sometimes there was other things going on. We would have, you know, like a holiday or some reason the clinic was closed. There was a couple days I was sick throughout the year. So it was like a range of hours.
Okay.
And, you know, it didn't have exact always. Some weeks, yeah, kind of. Some were more than others.
So what was the, it's hard to find this in this moment. What was the total number of hours was 2,027?
Yeah.
Correct? Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's all. And the quarter hours, I was just, you explained that.
Yeah. And she definitely had more than five in every category. Okay. Okay. So, Okay. I'm good with the application then. We can go to the next one. Do you want to do the next one?
Well, this one is for Dr. Fetchick, degree from William James, which is now accredited, internship, Southwest Behavioral accredited. At the point I had not seen the doctor's note, so I was going to ask about that, but now that was received. So she wanted accommodation.
We have to be careful. We cannot use medical.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, but the accommodations.
You can just say, are you comfortable with the accommodations?
I see. Yes, I'm comfortable with them.
Okay. Yeah, the same rules apply here as we do when we do complaints screening. So, yes, I'm comfortable with the accommodation and the fact, you know, she is a reapplication. And so, yeah, I don't have any problems. I'll go ahead and make the motion for this category 4A for permission for approval to move to the full board to take the ECCC, Dr. Kenton, Dr. Emmer, Dr. Fejic, and Dr. Symington. Do I hear a second?
Yes, a second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion approved. We can move to item B,
okay.
Which is
Amy Marie Polsky.
Yeah, requesting approval to sit for the ECCC and licensure. Do you want to go? You want to start, Doctor?
Okay. So we have a degree from Midwestern accredited. The internship is APA accredited. The postdoc. One of the supervisors didn't appear to be licensed in Arizona, but I don't know if that's probably not required. Is that right? And then I did, we had some history concerns that she made an explanation for. I don't know what we can say in the meeting.
No, I mean, she reported past history of arrest, but it was 18 years ago, and she provided all the documentation.
So I'm okay. It was a long time ago.
Yeah. Okay. The next one we have is Amanda Haas, and Amanda's on the phone too. Amanda got her doctoral degree from Walden University. She has a pre-doctoral and a post-doctoral completed, which looks good. She has all of her documentation in place. She indicated she was denied a LISAC because she didn't meet the requirements by BBHE, and BBHE doesn't have the records. It did not come up in the query, so I appreciate her reporting that, which is the right thing to do, and I didn't have any problems with her application.
No, I'm okay with it too.
You want to do the next one?
Oh, sorry. Dr. Annibale has a degree from Midwestern accredited. The practicum has 1,101 hours. Internship at NAU, 2,000 hours. It's APIC approved. Has two references. He added a station form. I thought it was complete.
So I'm yes, okay with no it. Problems with it. With Dr. Annabelle. Mm-hmm. Next one is Anne Harper. Dr. Harper got her degree from Argosy in educational psychology in 2000 school psych. She did her pre-doctoral and a postdoctoral from Avondale. Mm-hmm. Internship was AP approved. The only question I had for you, Ms. Folks, is do you have an official transcript from Argosy? I mean, they get it from that post-secondary commission, or I think ASPB is the holder of their transcripts. Do you have that?
Actually, they're the custodian of records. The transcripts come from Parchment. And this one actually was mailed. This came as an official copy. It's an official record, but when I go to copy it or scan it, it throws that unofficial copy on.
Oh, okay. So I just wanted to make
sure. The file is official.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that you have the official.
I do. Yes.
Okay. Any questions on Anne Harper?
No, I don't have any.
Okay. You want to go to the next?
Luis Sanchez-Vesquez. It's a reapplication. Degree is from Walden. It's not an accredited program. The internship, I had a question on that. Show you, because it had different number of hours. So it says in one place 2013, another place 2000, and then the two different places that there were the internship was completed, and one has 947. And one has 953. So that seemed to be 1,901 hours, but maybe I added wrong. And then the postdoc, in one place it says 1,000 hours, but then it's reported in another place it's 1,999. So I don't know. I was a little confused about the hours.
So he is a reapplication. He was reviewed by this board. Okay. And so unless the, previous. I'll go back and look at his. I'm looking at his.
Yeah. I want to try to find.
So the first internship he did at Kemper. Yes. Associates at the Litchfield Park. Which was 953.
Right.
And then this there's a training manual. And then he did a second internship for 947. So, and you said that adds a nine.
Well, maybe I added wrong.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Many members, it looks like there's a duplicate of the second internship. I think that might be throwing things off.
They're two different internships.
Yeah, there's one at Kemper, one at another place.
Okay.
And then, but what he doesn't have, which is a good, I'm not seeing,
I got 1900.
Yeah. So,
But then we have the postdoc of 1999. One place, and then another place it said 1,000.
Where's the postdoc? What page is that?
It's 10.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's right on top. Okay. So it's 1999.
But in another place it was listed as 1,000. I have to find that page.
You know, I'm actually less worried about what they say on the pages because they always do an estimate. They don't have the exact hours when they're filling out the form. And then they actually submit the form. They put their, you know, it is based on the actual hours. So if there's a discrepancy, that often it will happen with a postdoc because depending on when he applied, you know. And then...
Well, that was my only concern there. So that's okay.
Okay, he put 1,000 there because that's all he needs is 1,000. So he put that he's going to do a postdoc for 1,000 hours.
Well, he needed 1,100, right?
Yeah.
Because I think the internship they added.
They
said the internship was 2,000 on page 31 and it's 1,900.
Yeah, but he meets the hour requirement. The forms are the most important things.
Okay. Then it's all right. Okay. We did have, you know, the reapplication. So do you think we should approve it?
Okay. Next one is Nadia Morley. She is a new application. A new means reapplying after a few years. She has to retake the ECCC. She talked about her study plan and well aware of what she needs to do. I don't know if she was the one who asked about, there was one person who asked about that she just wants to take the ECCC part one. Do you remember who that was?
There was one.
Dr. Poor. I believe that's Dr. Poor's application.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Okay, so it's not her. Okay. I was fine with the application. Did you have any questions on?
Are you okay with the study guide
plan? She seems really, based on it, I know she doesn't go into a lot of detail, but she's working with so many companies and, you know, so, you know, she.
Okay.
Really.
I only question because another time we questioned someone's study guide.
Yeah, we have, but they will say, I'm going to study more. They're so vague, and she's working with 3 testing companies. She's analyzed where her weaknesses are, and she's kind of going over what's the best strategy for now, you know.
Okay, then I'm okay.
It shows a lot of thought, you know, even though it wasn't detailed, but the fact that she's consulting with so many groups, you know, so.
Okay, then I approve it.
Mm-hmm. Next,
Rodney Reed, Dr. Mm-hmm. Reed, the reapplication, graduate of Alliant accredited program, internship, 2,000 hours accredited, postdoc, 3,760 hours, quite a bit, has the references and the attestation form. I think it's okay to approve.
Okay. And the next one is Tammy Ricky. I don't know how you say your name, Tammy.
Ritchie.
Uh-huh. I'm thinking how 2C sounds, so it must have the CH sound. So, Dr. Ritchie, thank you for joining us. Dr. Ritchie got her doctorate of psychology from California Southern University, which is not APA approved. I did read through her catalog carefully, and the degree is intended to prepare those interested in pursuing licensure as a psychologist, and it is in the catalog. So
I did have a question, though, on the cognitive and affective basis. She lists 3 sports psychology courses. I don't know if that on page 10. If those are, if they really covered cognitive and affective in the sports psychology courses. Dr. Ritchie, would you like to explain how they covered those areas of cognitive and affective bases?
Absolutely. Those courses were designed for basically athletes who were struggling or kids that were playing sports. We're struggling with a fear of anxiety, depression, things like that. And we concentrated on that aspect of it. Does that make sense?
Cover any cognitive bases?
Cognitively, I'm sorry, it's been a little bit.
Sure.
I would say, oh goodness, if I could review that, I could definitely let you know on that.
Okay, Dr. Miller, do you have any concerns?
Yeah, I am.
We do have the catalog.
Yeah, I'm looking at the catalog and I'm trying to find.
It's just such a long catalog.
I'm
sorry.
We're going to put any relevant pages, applicants, you know, by putting so much, it actually makes our jobs a lot more difficult.
I apologize.
Everything was very, very, there's 464 pages to review. Most applications are between 20 and 30 pages. So.
I apologize. I got carried away, I think.
It seems to be, it might be around 100, page 159 of the catalog. I didn't check that, but now I just realized.
No, I need to go back to the transcript, actually.
Okay.
I'm just going back there, so. And this is hopefully Tammy Ritchie, okay.
So in the catalog, the psychology section is around 155, 154. I see there is a course on cognition.
Maybe she didn't take that cognition. I'm looking at the Chicago School of Professional Psych transcript too. So one of the things we're going to ask you to do, Dr. Ritchie, is to submit more evidence that you have covered cognitive affective bases. It's very clearly defined in the APA standards. What is cognitive affective? The courses that you just mentioned, in my opinion, don't seem to fall in that category. You will receive a letter from the board indicating what you can do to meet that requirement. Sometimes you can meet it through your comprehensive exams. There's other ways to meet that requirement. It looks like you did take a class in cognitive emotion and motivation.
Oh.
Put it in the wrong category.
I apologize.
And it's a 3-credit semester course. So that course actually does.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for seeing that. Thank you so much.
So on 163, 198 of our thing, and 163 of the catalog are the 3 sports psychology courses. But I didn't see that. I'm glad you caught that on the transcript.
No, it was in the form, so I'm trying to find the right transcript now.
So that's okay then.
Thank you for finding that.
Okay.
I just need to verify that it's on the transcript.
Okay.
We will. I almost think. Yes, I do see it on your. Transcript that you completed at Chicago School of Professional Psychology. So one thing I would ask you is to work with Ms. Folks and update that form.
Sure.
So it's in the right category, but I'm assuming you'll get that done ASAP. So by the time we are before the full board, so it'll be contingent on you completing that form. So,
okay, thank you.
So, and okay, everything else seemed okay. Did you have other questions?
No, just that.
Thank you, Dr. Katerina, for catching that. So.
Thank you for catching it in the transcript.
Yes, thank you
it
both.
Was great.
Thank you.
Okay, I guess who does the next one?
I'll go ahead and do Veronica Poor. Dr. Poor has submitted. I do not see her. Oh, there she is. She has submitted a study plan. One of the things that Dr. Poor has asked is to appeal not to take the ECCC part two. She does have a detailed study plan. She, however, this is considered a new application, Dr. Poor, and you will fall under the requirement, which is set in, you know, that you will need to take the ECCC part two. At the start of the meeting, I kind of read through who all are required, and because this is considered a new application, you will need to take it. So your appeal, we would not be recommending that the appeal be granted to not take the ECCC. We will go ahead and approve your application, provided Dr. Katerina does not have questions as well. But your application looks fine. We want to wish you the best, and you know, hopefully you'll be successful in passing. And the ECCC part two, believe it or not, is a, you know, if you have a lot of clinical work, you're going to, you know, hopefully it will go well, but it will be required. So
I guess I do have just a few questions. I don't know if they can be answered. This has been an incredibly, incredibly long process. I think what has been, excuse me, so frustrating is that, you know, this is going on 2 years. I mean, really, I mean, and actually it's been longer than that because I have struggled with the test, the part one. But it's one of those where, you know, I've kind of followed all the rules. I've done reapplications. I've done, you know, everything I've needed to do. I was starting this process to try to really pass back last summer, well before the ECCC part two kind of kicked in. And I hired tutors and study, I paid for study materials. I did peer groups. I did everything I possibly could think of to make sure that I did pass. And because the processing was so long, I actually went through another state just so that I didn't have to wait a 10-month period or a 12-month period in between my assessments. And I really do feel like those prolonged periods in between my testing attempts is part of why I'm here nearly, you know, 5 years later. I'm really looking at 4 or 5 years later. And, you know, I know COVID hit and nobody was anticipating the delays with that, but I quit my job. I was so ready to be fully invested in this process so that I could get where I want to be. It's been tough. Like it has been really, really hard to go through those very prolonged periods of time in between my testing attempts. And I feel like that's part of the struggle is when you're waiting 9, 10, 12 months in between testing attempts, how do you keep going? You know, how do you keep fighting through that? And so I feel like that alone was such a deterrent in getting to, you know, my licensure. But I tried to be as persistent as I possibly could. I've done everything I need to. I've kind of jumped over every hurdle. I just was hoping that there was a chance, you know, with everything going on with COVID and long delays in processing and, you know, just trying to do everything I possibly could, if there was any way that this, you know, that was an option. And that's really why I was, you know, just asking if that is even a possibility. And, you know, I know that there's a new process and, you know, it's just one of those where I feel like I've tried to do everything. The other really frustrating thing is there's no information about this ECCC part two. There, I mean, other than what's on ASPBB lining out what type of test it is, there's no study materials, there's no practice questions, there's really nothing out there. It's kind of just, you're winging it. And I don't know, it's a little frustrating. That's all. I just was hoping to at least plead my case and asking if there were any exceptions or any, you know, grandfathering provisions, but I just was hoping.
I don't think at this point, because we are governed by our statutes, Dr. Poor, I feel, you know, I hear your pain, and I know it's not been easy with COVID, and, you know, you've been going through this for a few years now. Because it's considered a new application, you will fall under those requirements, you know. Ms. Galvin, is there anything we're missing?
There is not. The final decision with respect to any appeal would lie with the board, but your perspective on her appeal and the new application is correct.
Okay. So, you know, but at this point, there's really, you know, you asked for two things. One is, and Ms. Galvin will work with Ms. Folks on the agenda, but we are going to go ahead and approve your application to sit for the ECCC part one. You know, part one, you have to pass that before you can do part two.
Well, she passed it in Wisconsin.
Oh, you passed it in Wisconsin. Oh, okay. So you're here then. Okay. I am sorry, I'm a little confused. So you're just here to appeal. That will need to go to the full board. That I thought we were looking at your application.
No, I went to Wisconsin because, I mean, you know, waiting 10
you
months.
Did pass it. I see that.
I did pass it.
So,
yeah, I fully understand.
So what are we reviewing, Ms. Folks, then, for in terms of our application? Because the appeal cannot be done by our board. We're looking only at application. What are we reviewing?
It's to see if I have
I'll
to
ask
take
Ms.
Two.
Folks, Ms. Folks, what are we reviewing?
Madam Chair, because she is submitting a new application and has not passed part two, that's why it's on the exam and licensure section. It is for approval to sit for part two of the ECCC since she's already passed part one.
Madam Chair, just for clarification purposes, her application was filed on September 15, 2021, which is clearly after the November 1, 2020 date that the board had determined that the statutory language ECCC is inclusive of one and two.
Because that went into effect November 1, 2020.
Correct. And this application was received after that date.
Okay.
Madam Chair, committee members, just for a point of clarification, Dr. Poor asked about grandfathering. The only way an applicant is grandfathered in to just passing ECCC Part 1 is if they already hold a license in another state. That's it. That's all we have.
Isn't that for 1 year? No, or just, do you have a license in Wisconsin?
No, I do not hold, I applied in Wisconsin so that I could take the part one without having to wait for 10 to 12 months is really what I did, because
apply in Wisconsin?
It was after a failed attempt on May 5th. So it was in May.
May 2021. So that's still after the date. So even if you did it through Arizona in May, you would have still been required to take the ECCC part two because of the November 1, 2020 was the cutoff date. So any application received after November 1, 2020 would require it.
Okay. And the only reason why I applied anew is because that's what I was told to do. I have an original application from 2016. I mean, that's how far back I'm going.
Yeah, but each time you have to reapply, it's considered it's considered a re-app, a new app, and all the rules apply regardless. So Ms. Folks, correct me if I'm wrong. If somebody applied on, say, September 1, 2020, did not pass the EPPP, and then reapplied or redid a re-app in January 2021, would they be required to take part two, according to her?
Yes, as it stands now, that would be correct.
Okay. Okay, so we can still have the full board hear your appeal, but you know, I'm kind of just stating for purposes of information and my perspective on how we are, you know, because of those dates. So just to give more clarification to the issue. So.
Is it each time you apply to take the test again, then that application is the last date we look at? That's the first time you took it.
I'm sorry, but that's how it's stated in our statutes. And Ms. Folks can, you know, we try to direct you to more information on the EPPP, which is on the ASPPB website. And okay. So
I guess my only question, and maybe it's just for future applicants, because, you know, in going through this long process, you know, obviously looking at other states' requirements and looking at other states, like, I guess what is hard to understand is, you know, each time there's the failed attempt, or, you know, let's say you pass, now you have to again wait for board approval. I guess. That is something that is hard to understand, that each time you have to wait. So then that is prolonging these, you know, people getting through to their license, because each time you're having to wait for board approval to just, and especially if there's a second exam, you know, you're waiting when you've already really been approved, but yet you have to wait longer to just even take this exam, I guess.
Madam Chair, committee members, Dr. Poor, that is not quite correct. When someone is approved by the board, they are approved for both part one and part two. In ASPPB's system, it's called CERTEMI, they have, or at least that's how I pronounce it, I add both workflows for the applicant at the same time. So as soon as someone passes part one, they can register and take part two as soon as they want to. There's nothing that has to come before the board. It's when there's a failed exam that someone has to come back and get approval again. And the reason why is because things can change. And so the reapplication covers things that can change in between. And then our rule states that the board can also base a decision on a reapplication on previously submitted documents. But the reapplication is still a brand new application. And then after a third attempt where the applicant did not achieve a passing score, the applicant then has to do what we call applying anew under R4-26-203. They have to submit the whole application again. However, we do transfer over any static documents like transcripts and supervised experience verifications. But that's how it works. That's how our rules are written.
But thank you for your feedback, Dr. Poor.
Thank you.
Please reach out to ASPPB to register for part two. We will submit, it to the full board for approval, which meets next Friday, to move you forward to be able to take the EPPP part two. So. And Ms. Galvin, does her appeal need to move to the full board as a separate item?
Unless she's going to withdraw it.
Okay. So you can work with Ms. Folks and make that, you know, we will go ahead and work on the specific aspect related to approving you to take the EPPP part two and licensure.
Thank you.
And you're really close. So just, yeah. So thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Okay. Next we have
Dr. Winga.
Oh, that was it. Dr. Morley, we actually reviewed your case, and I don't think we had any questions or we were aware of. No, Dr. Morley, did we just talk? Yeah.
That was Dr. Poor.
That was, yeah. No, I just see Dr. Morley joined us. That's what I was just going to say. If you don't have any questions, we've already reviewed the application. So.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I got a little confused because I saw applying anew again. So, I'll go ahead and make a motion to request approval to sit for the EPPPN licensure for Dr. Pileski, Dr. Haas, Dr. Annabelle, Dr. Harper, Dr. Vasquez, Dr. Morley, Dr. Reed, Dr. Ritchie.
After she speaks with them, Ms. Folks.
And she's going to update with the contingency that she update the coursework form. And Dr. Poor to with the EPPP part two.
I second the motion. Yes.
Do you second it? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion approved. I'm assuming none is not a doctor. So item D. Requesting approval of temporary licensure and or sit for the EPPP. We have Dr. Brett Ringdahl, who is applying to sit for the temporary licensure. I didn't have any, again, he is only applying for part two. He's already passed part one. So he's doing the temporary licensure. I didn't have any questions on that. What about you, Dr. Katarina?
No, didn't have any.
Okay. So Dr. Ringdahl, thank you for being here, but you're good to go. So,
and thank you so much.
Full board next Friday, where it will be formally, that will be our recommendation to the full board.
I have one quick question. Is there any statute about time between EPPP part one and taking, does that expire at any point before you take EPPP part two? Or is there a time frame where that would become, my EPPP part one score would be too old?
Your EPPP part one score never ages. I mean, okay. I've used it 20 years from now. I don't know about a time gap. I have not heard anything about that. Your temporary license is only valid for how long, Ms. Folks, Ms. Packenden?
3 years.
3 years.
Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair, 3 years. And then the board also approved the one of the COVID waivers gives an extension of time if necessary of up to 18 months. So it's a pretty generous amount of time considering.
So your temporary license would be active for that time period unless things change, because the COVID things could change. But I have not heard of a specific time gap between part one and part two. As you know, across the country, not all states have implemented it. Some states have. But I can tell you your EPPP part one scores, we've seen people who've taken it 30 years ago, submit them, as long as they meet the passing requirements that is in effect at the time. So.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I really appreciate everything.
Thank you. Do you want to do the next one?
Dr. Lorinda Cumming. So she has a degree from Walden, not a accredited program, but she does have a degree. She has an internship with Dr. Buwalda. Not APA accredited, but she has 2,080 hours, practicum of 817 hours, and a postdoc of 240, I believe. So it looks like that equals 3,000 hours, and she has the references and the attestation form. So she seemed okay to me.
Yeah, I'm good with her application too. Next one we have is Rachel Jensen. Rachel Jensen, who got her degree from Midwestern, did an APA-approved pre-doctoral internship. Her postdoc is in progress. I don't think I had any questions regarding her application.
No concerns.
And I think that concludes. Do you want to make a motion, Dr. Katerina?
Okay, let me get the title of this one. Hold on. Okay, I think that we are approving temporary licensure and or the ability to sit for EPPP for Dr. Ringdahl, Dr. Cumming, and that's it, right?
Dr. Jensen.
Jensen. Oh, it's on the next page. And Dr. Jensen, sorry.
I second. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All three candidates will move to the full board for requesting approval of temporary licensure and are to sit for one or more parts of the EPPP. Next one is requesting approval by credential. The first one we have is Andrew
Bertagnoli.
Oh, Bertagnoli. Thank you. I learned a new word. Oh, it's like Noki. So,
new. Yes. Yeah. GN is like,
Bertagnoli. Okay. So, he is applying through the National Register. The only question I had regarding his application, and I want to look at it again, is,
the letter just came through on that National Register.
Yeah, it was not so much the National Register. I saw that and that was fine. But on his application, he marked no, and he should have marked yes, but he did provide us with all the information we need to make a decision. And so I wanted to,
Madam Chair, committee members, if I could, Dr. Bertagnoli applied before the complaint was filed in California.
As soon as it
was filed, he notified us that his application was put on hold until the complaint was dismissed by California as having no merit, and then it was restarted again.
Okay, that really helped, because that's what I was wondering about.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Okay, so that's what I was worried about too. So that's okay now, right?
Yeah. There was definitely, I saw the letter from the California board indicating that, the case is closed, there's no violation. So that's good. And then we have the National Register letter. So, okay, thank you for that clarification. Is it possible, and maybe that there's a note in the file indicating that, because
I apologize. Yeah, I should have put a little memo in there.
Yeah, I think that would help, because it looked like he said no, but maybe.
What about the note on page 4? Is that what you're referring to? That it was dismissed?
No, the dismiss is fine, but the fact that he marked no.
Oh.
Because he applied before the complaint was even filed. So
good point.
Yeah, that's the part that, if we don't have that history in the file, we won't remember.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I'll put a note in there that it's in his file, should there ever be a public records request.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Elliott, Michael Elliott, degree from International University, and has a CPQ license in California and Nevada. I didn't see any concerns.
Nope, I didn't either.
So should I make a motion to
approve
for a licensure by credential for Dr. Bertagnoli and Dr. Elliott?
Second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The next category is universal recognition. And I think I'm going to do this as a group, Dr. Katerina, if you're okay. And we can.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. So we have 5 candidates, and Dr. Lutke, Dr. Edwards, or Dr. Hamill Dr. Megan Hamill and Dr. Philip Hamill and Dr. Nicole Wolf, who are all applying by universal recognition. All of them have earned degrees in an applied field of psychology. And if I'm not mistaken, all of them are APA approved programs. Mm-hmm. They have provided evidence of meeting our residency criteria for Arizona, either through a driver's license or mortgage or utility bills. And so I didn't see any problems with their application. And I see Dr. Wolf online. Oh, she was. Yeah. There she is.
Yeah.
Looks good, Dr.
Wolf. Go volunteers, Dr. Wolf. Go volunteers.
So it looks good. No questions there. And I'm ready to hear a motion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'd like to make a motion to request approval for licensure by universal recognition for Dr. Lutke, Dr. Edwards, Dr. Megan Carlson Hamill, Dr. Philip Hamill, and Dr. Wolf.
Second.
You're a second. Okay. All in favor? Yeah. Aye.
Aye. Motion approved. Welcome to Arizona, Dr. Wolf. You're just moving here. So, and thank you all our licensee holders for being here and being ready to answer questions. It always helps the process, especially if you think there was going to be questions. So, I don't see, I think we can move to where is my agenda? I lost it. Okay, so the next item is, we have an item.
Oh,
I missed 5, that. Discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding adoption of part 2 skills of the examination for professional practice in psychology. Does anyone want to give us a little background?
Yes, please.
Are you supplying the background for this agenda item? Kathy?
I apologize.
I'm just asking, are you supplying the background for this item, or do you want to collaborate on this?
Let's collaborate.
Okay, very good. I believe this matter is on the ARC agenda for purposes of having a discussion at this level relative to, you know, the larger, or as a precursor to the larger discussion that will be on the November 5th meeting agenda. If ARC is prepared to have this conversation today, we can certainly do that and forward, you know, any of that, any recommendations from ARC to the full board. Alternatively, if the committee wishes to not address this topic at the committee level, we can simply have the conversation on November 5th with the full board. So I believe Ms. Folks put it on the agenda just to afford you the opportunity to have the discussion if you wanted to and if you felt it was appropriate. Ms. Folks, would you... do you have any other thoughts on that?
Yes, committee members, Madam Chair, I believe Dr. Catarino had questions last month, and I think Dr. Malott had them as well. Okay. And so that's one of the reasons we put it on for the committee, was you could ask the questions you wanted and we could talk about it.
Okay. I think, I'm sorry, but I'm not remembering.
The question I think I had was if a person goes to another state and takes maybe the EPPP part 1, that state doesn't require part 2, can then they become licensed in that state? Can then they come to Arizona without having the part 2?
Yeah.
So that would be a way around the
but universal 2. Recognition is also another way around it. So
yeah.
But again, they would have to have a license in the other state. But under universal recognition, they have to have the license for a year or more. Mm-hmm. But under the grandfathering in, that was not a requirement. They just had to have passed part 1 and be licensed in another state. There was no time decided by the board on that I recall.
And then they could also join National Register or get a CPQ or something.
Right. Again,
it's 5 years.
Exactly.
Oh, it's 5 years.
5 years.
So there is that. So with the least time is that 1 year for, you know, universal recognition. So these many people that we talked about that may not want to feel that it's not appropriate for them to take ERPP part two, that's what may happen. I just thought we should discuss that.
So, Ms. Pakanan, you mentioned something about a discussion before the full board. And what was, could you talk about that? I mean,
yeah, so most recently when the board reviewed and discussed this issue, board staff has presented the communications, the template notices, if you will, that are routinely issued to, in this case, it was temporary license holders. Mm-hmm. So at the conclusion of that discussion, and I apologize, I don't have the draft minutes available, but you'll have them soon from the October 1 board meeting. But the board directed staff to put this matter on the November 5th agenda to...
Yeah, and I do remember that, yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so the only thing, since this is under consideration, I'm just wondering... if we can pool together some information on ERPP part two and put it on our website, because there is really a dearth of information, which is, you know, which can be anxiety producing to our applicants. So, and, you know, I also need to do some due diligence as an academic person and know a little bit more about the ERPP part two. I've seen it at the ASPPB meetings. I've seen Mark when they've shown us videos and stuff. So, but that's about all I know. So, which is not good. I don't like being in the dark. So.
Yes, Madam Chair, I think that's an excellent suggestion. I just went to ASPPB's page that is specific to part two, and they're providing a link to the candidate handbook, which I'll confirm that the candidate handbook has been updated with the ERPP part two information, but there's quite a bit of information in terms of the exam overview, the format, the validity, the job task analysis. So I do think that...
Do you have a practice test?
There are sample items coming soon. I don't see a practice test.
Because that would really help people, like what we saw at the ASPPB meetings. So maybe we should put a link directly on our page just to make it easier on people to find. So
agreed. And we will have Dr. Matt Turner at our, unfortunately we couldn't get him on the November 5th agenda because it is so full, but we are inviting him to the December 10th meeting to discuss the early entry issue. But I can ask him if he would also provide us with an update on all things ERPP part two as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then maybe we could almost put that part of the recording in that ERPP part two information page. So
yes, Madam Chair, we can.
Okay. Okay. And one of the things, what I know it's not on the agenda, so, but I'm just going to share my thought, but we're not going to discuss it, is that it'd be nice to invite all our academic programs, let them know that we're discussing that early entry, because it really impacts them, so.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's a great suggestion.
Okay. We can go to item number six, new agenda items for future meetings. Okay, hearing none, we can move to item number seven, adjournment. Did we lose Dr. Caterino? We did. Well, we are adjourned. We have no quorum. Ms. N, Ms. Galvin, without a
yeah.
Okay. I can try to text her to bring her back if you'd like, but.
No, I mean, she was on up until you were talking about bringing in the program directors and stuff. She was still there.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. You've lost quorum. The meeting is over.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey there, let me write the conclusion time of the agenda of the meeting. Okay, well.
I know, that was interesting. I've never.
There she goes.
Oh, there, she's waiting. She's here.
Oh, we'll tell her really quick then.
I just pulled her in.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry, I froze. I lost everyone. Are we done?
Yeah, it was fine. So I think maybe you missed a tiny portion of what I was saying, which was, it was Dr. Malott suggesting that we invite the program directors to the December 10th meeting for this discussion, and I agreed. And then all we did subsequent to that was acknowledge no more quorum, you know, meeting's done, but that doesn't impact everything that was done, you know, all the motions that were adopted. So we're fine.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. And I'll talk to you in an hour.
Yes, indeed. And I do want to let you know too, Dr. Caterina, that we have, staff has a meeting